back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. And certainly today I positively wish I were out at State Fair getting some shrimp and grits with Don Mohler, former Baltimore County executive. But Don, I posted the picture. I made it to Fadley's for some curbside earlier in the week. Had a crab cake. My wife got the mac and cheese because I brought it home, and she said, "That mac and cheese is really good." So I know the sponsors are they're all struggling right now, but they're all hanging in through COVID, and we're going to be getting to our local community and some great stuff going on here at Baltimore Positive throughout the time. I want to remind everyone, you're getting your ballots to vote right now. I want to make sure everybody's getting that stuff out there, as well as all the mayoral, as well as the city council races, all at Baltimore Positive. Also want to give a shout out to Jeff Mohler, who's closing deals. Now we're going into June. Houses are being bought, they're being sold, they're being shown online from 6 feet away with a mask. Jeff Mohler's doing that. You can find them at Mohler and Gary Realty. And last but not least, and a very, very important, I now have three empty Taharka ice cream pints out on the ledge here, the Wake and Bake, the Honey Graham, the Pistachio. I will say, Don, it has all been replenished, and somehow, some way, when I get to State Fair, I'm going to 6 feet away, a drop-off of a little bit of this delicious ice cream, so you got to give me your favorite flavor for you
there
and Linda.
We go.
All right. So, you know, we've had all sorts of interesting people on, and I know you have been trying for months to sort of align all the departments of how a municipality is run, right? And we've had the police commissioner on in Baltimore, in Commissioner Harrison. We've had all sorts of politicians, community leaders, in all sorts of ways. But this is a little different, and this is something we, quite frankly, should have gotten to. And I'm glad that we're not through season one without talking to the important people keeping us safe, especially out in Baltimore County. And I know this is near and dear to your heart, Johnny O, so I'm going to let you do the honors here on the next couple, because these are people that are also in my life as a Baltimore County business owner.
Well, nothing more important than public safety, Nestor, and we are really pleased to be able to welcome Baltimore County Fire Chief Joanne Run. Came to the county from Howard County. So, Chief, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Thank you very much.
Well, Chief, let's start with an easy one. Or maybe it isn't an easy one, but for our listeners, at what point does a little girl running around the neighborhood, fooling around with her friends, say to mom and dad, "You know what? I think I want to be a firefighter"? How does that happen?
Well, my parents were a little taken back when I did say that, to be honest.
How
with
old
you.
Were you, by the way?
I was in my early 20s.
Oh, okay. So this wasn't like, I'm thinking like the little girl thing might have been like Richard Scarry's, you know, pictures and going to the firehouse when you, because I did all of that when I was a kid, the Dalmatians, the whole deal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I did see the fire engines going down the road, but it wasn't really until I was older, and I actually was a hairdresser, to be honest with you, and I worked in a salon, and my cousin came to live with us for a little while. Unfortunately, he was going through some challenging times with his family, and he came to live with us, and he was a volunteer firefighter, and he would go out on calls, and he'd head down the road. His pager would go off, and he'd head down the road, and I just I said, "Can I go with you one day?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure, come on, jump in." So I went down with him at the fire station, and then I found myself, as I was doing hair and taking care of my clients in my seat every day, talking more and more and more about what I did the night before at the firehouse or what call I went on the night before. And my manager one day said to me, "You know, you probably should try to be a firefighter because you seem like you're much more passionate about that than you are hair."
No, let's first career now. Give me your background as a cosmetologist, because, like, you clearly were trained to do this. You had a job. You had a career. You were an entrepreneur, right? You had your own clients, right?
Yeah. Honestly, I was. I'd worked in a salon for a few years and had a client background and had followers, and so it was a little bit of a shock to them when I actually did move into the fire field and I was cross-trained, so I've been cross-trained all my career, and that means EMS and fire and all hazards. So it was a little shocking to all of them, but I'm telling you, my cousin coming to live with us was a sign. That's the direction I needed to head, and it's been awesome ever since.
What is it, Chief, and you mentioned EMS and the firefighting side, and those of us who've been in government get that distinction. But a lot of our listeners, they hear that, and they know that the EMS personnel show up and the firefighters. How do you give us the four dummies breakdown about the different responsibilities that each side of that operation have?
Sure. Sure. So the department actually responds on multifaceted calls. So what that means is when you call the 911 center for whatever it is, if you have a broken arm or you have or you're sick or you're not feeling well, that's the EMS side of our department. So that's the emergency medical side of our department. Now, all of our personnel, even though they're not working on the EMS units, are trained in emergency medical services. So all of our personnel do have background in taking care of you medically. So if you see a fire engine show up, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be taken care of and they're firefighters and they're not going to know what they're doing, because they do have medical training, because the majority of our calls are emergency medical related. Now, the other training our firefighters have are firefighter training. So they're trained in how to take care of fires and how to teach you the preventative measures and what you need to do to reduce your risk of having a fire. But then they're also trained in high-angle rescue, and they're also trained in trench rescue, and there's also hazardous materials training. And then if you're out on a highway and you happen to be in a car accident, they're also trained on how to get you out of that car if it's banged up really bad and you can't get the door open, or it's rolled over multiple times and they literally have to cut the car away from you. So they're trained in a lot of different things. So that'll kind of give you a snapshot of what they all go through. Training is typically 5 to 6 months, depending on whether or not they're doing firefighter training and EMS cross training, or the emergency medical technicians are typically in there for 4 months. And they have just a brief interview grouping, I would say not interview, but overview of what firefighting is about, so that they have a clue what the firefighters are doing, but they're not technically trained in the firefighting itself. It's mostly just medical training.
Baltimore County Fire Chief Joanne Rund is our guest, along with Don Mueller. We're doing Baltimore Positive here today, and as much as we've talked about education in various counties, and of course that's Don's background, the differences county to county, I'm always interested. I was raised in Baltimore County, schooled in Baltimore County. How my life would have been different, or curriculum might have been different, if I was in Howard County or Harford County or some other place. And we talk so much about Baltimore City here as the election's coming up. You, as well as Melissa Hyatt, as we're going to speak about the police chief as well, make county moves or city moves or jurisdiction moves after such a long, long time, and you bring a wealth of experience from another place. Don, I my sports background would say when the Yankees coach becomes the Orioles manager, right? Like, you bring a different philosophy, but certainly firefighting's firefighting, I would think. But this is very interesting what's happened in your life and your career, let alone from the cosmetology side. And if you're looking on the camera, you'll see I haven't had a haircut in about 3 months, so I take that seriously right now, Joanne. But moving, that's an interesting career move for you, but also, you know, finding a book that's already there in Baltimore County, but also wanting to bring your own thoughts and your own stamp to what you're doing in the county.
Yes. So I did do 32 years in Howard County, almost 33, and decided that I wanted to become a fire chief probably about 5 years ago. So I started working towards making sure that I learned what it was to be a fire chief and focused on what it was to be a fire chief. And then I started applying all around the different jurisdictions, honestly, just to get some practice and some ideas of what people were looking for in a fire chief, so that when I finally did make that step into it, I had a clue.
Well, what is that then? What were they looking for? What is a fire chief? Because it's a great name. Like, Dom was a executive, and you get principals, and you get presidents. Chief, I love that. It's a great title, isn't it? Not many people get to be a chief.
Pretty clear, isn't it?
Yeah, chief is a great title.
It's a great title.
I do love Esther's question there, though, Chief, in the sense of what did you learn through all the interviews?
Sure. Well, executive presence is one of the biggest things that I learned out of everything as I was going through and doing the different interviews. I mean, I interviewed in Virginia, I interviewed in Maryland, I interviewed, you know, three or four times before I actually got this this position. And they're looking for someone who is going to be able to run an organization in the direction that they want it to go. In this instance, in Baltimore County, they wanted change. They wanted transparency. They wanted someone who had an open mind to the vision of how the county executive wanted to move the county. So I assume, based on the fact that I'm sitting here, that I met his expectations on what he was looking for. You know, I've really enjoyed working with the team since I've been here in Fairfax County. They were looking for, and that was, I really didn't go for the fire chief job at that one. I went through an assistant chief job at that one, and they were looking for someone that was going to be focused on recruitment and changing the face of Fairfax and how it was known for its diversity and its ability to be a well-rounded department, and the person that was going to lead that program and take them into the next generation, if you will, of fire department programs and moving forward. So I consider myself very blessed to be here in Baltimore County. It is a very, very different department, and what I mean by that is it's not only two-pronged with EMS and fireside as far as career tracks that you can take, but it also has a volunteer side that goes along with it, so it's a combination department, which makes it quite complex when you're running a department like that, because you have to know how the volunteer system works in order to manage it along with a career side of a department. So I've been working with volunteers my entire career, so I'm very familiar with how that program works. Although it's different in every county, it definitely you know, it's a really unique facet over here, if you will.
Well, Chief, let's pick up on that. Again, we're with Baltimore County Fire Chief Julian Rund, because I think that for our listeners, we often assume, and we shouldn't assume, that they know the specifics, the ins and outs of different agencies and how they work. And that's certainly what fascinates Nestor. And in Baltimore County, correct me if my numbers were wrong, my recollection is when I was there, we had 25, I think, career fire stations and 29 volunteers. Is that still the ballpark?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so 25 career, 29 volunteer. Give folks a sense of how career stations and volunteer stations coexist. Who does what? Who decides goes out on what call? Because that in itself is a really, seems to us, a significant administrative task that you're assigned.
Certainly. Certainly. So as far as who goes out on what calls are laid out basically by what is the closest unit to wherever that call is requested from. So it does not matter whether it's a career or a volunteer fire station. They dispatch whatever the closest unit is at that time. Now, with regards to our EMS units on the volunteer side, we've requested them to call attended. And what that means is they actually have volunteers that are at that on that unit that day, and they have someone where we can guarantee a response. And that is so critical, because when you have a heart attack, one minute could mean your life. So not that fireside doesn't mean the same, but we're not quite there yet. We're evolving into that as far as the organization goes. So with running a volunteer station, the station is staffed based on how many volunteers are available at the time. It doesn't matter whether it's a career or a volunteer firefighter, as long as their training meets the same standard. When they come to your house, or they come to your accident, or they come to your medical call, it basically means that they're trained to be able to do that. We make sure that when we dispatch units, that those units reflect whatever your needs are. So it's the closest unit, basically, that that's how we dispatch those. And we make sure that those that are riding those units meet a certain standard when it comes to training.
Chief Run, in the volunteer side, you talk about these things being close and call time being the thing that I guess that there's a measurement for that across, you know, all platforms in every single way, and people getting there and that phone call going out. I would think someone that's been at this as long as you've been at this, before we all had a cell phone, before we could text each other, when we all just had landlines, when there was no Google Maps and all of that was available, my mom would have the scanner on, you know, back in Dundalk in the 1980s, and I, you know, you go back into the late 80s, the digitization of our world and in making these call times shorter and getting response there, speak to that a little bit from where it was to where it is, because I would think technology along every curve, and we talk so much about that, we're talking about police calls as well, that I would think there have been a lot of lives saved just because Google's online now, we can get people places quicker and traffic patterns, all that can be figured out before a call happens, right?
Oh my goodness, yes. So we have units that are in front, that are inside of our emergency response vehicles, and they're basically called CAD units that are in there, and they watch when the drivers are going down the road. The officer that's on the other side actually watches, you know, where they're supposed to go, and there's a map on them. We didn't have that. We had map books that we, you know, in the 80s we had map books we had to flip through and read, you know, match up A to D, and this is where we're going, and you would never know. But now they actually connect in with the regular traffic, and our medic units actually have the, you know, mapping technology in the front of it that basically tells them what's happening with the traffic so that they can get around everything. And then our dispatch process is much, much quicker. So they get the 911 call, and everyone has something on their telephone that is basically reflective of what calls are going on and what calls are happening, in addition to, you know, having our radios that are much, much better nowadays than they were in the 1980s, so that you can hear things a lot better, and you can, they're, you know, there's Bluetooth on the radios, and there's just all kinds of upgraded technology that are wonderful. Dispatch obviously is much quicker because they don't have to call the fire station directly. They can, it goes through a radio or it goes through your cell phone. I mean, my phone goes off quite a few times at night when it hits a certain level to let me know we have a call, you know, a working fire, what a working fire is. When you arrive, you actually have fire that is happening there, and that our firefighters are actively engaged in firefighting. So in the 1980s, we didn't have that. We had this little buzzer pager on our hips that basically would go beep, 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 and it would, you know, it would write out on the top of the pager where you were going, and some of them didn't even have that. You would have to listen to the dispatcher that would be coming through the pager that was telling them, or you would have to run to the call and call the 911 center and say, where is it?
And then the map's no good, and you got to go to Royal Farms and buy another one, right?
Right, exactly, exactly.
Well, now, see, Don, I've now learned why it's Chief, because her phone goes off at 2 in the morning. If your phone goes off at 2 in the morning, they call you Chief, right?
Speaking of that, Mr. Chief, I know that you've been involved nationally in the effort to reduce the fatalities of firefighters across the nation. And as someone who sat in the office out there in the county office building, both as working for county executives and then for 7 months as county executive, there is no worse moment for a chief or a county executive to get that call, and I can still hear County Executive Kamenetz calling me one night to say, Don, and I could tell right away in his voice, and he just simply said, we've just lost a firefighter. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that and that danger that these brave men and women face every day and what you're trying to do to make that job safer, because I'm fascinated by your national involvement in that effort.
Yeah, so many years ago, I actually fell into a class. It was called Taking Care of Our Own, offered by the National Fallen Firefighters. And it just fascinated me with what they were doing at a national level to try to offer programs and opportunities for people to learn better about fire path flow and things like that to reduce line of duty deaths. So the more education we can provide our firefighters and our officers with that are riding those units when they respond, the better educated they are and the better they can approach those fires. So everything is evolving so quickly nowadays, the changing of technology with building homes and things like that, that our firefighters have to stay constantly on top of all that. So when you look at a firefighter and you see a blue-collar worker, they are very educated when it comes to doing those tasks because they have to be. You have to know what kind of cars are out there. I mean, shoot, we've got all kinds of cars that are telemetry operated, and you know they can drive themselves nowadays, and they have to know what they're in for when they're cutting into those cars to get you out of there. So at the national level, getting to know the National Fallen Firefighters, I sat through several of their programs, and they just really punched me in the gut with regards to the education that they provide our personnel. And one of the biggest things that I'm into is the safety of our personnel. Obviously. So when I started working with these personnel at the national level and constantly going through these programs, I was like, I need to get involved in this. I need to start doing things in a bigger level, not just in, at that time, it was just in Howard County. So I teach at a national level with regards to, it's called Attributes of Leading. And it's basically making our fire officers that are out there understand what it takes to be a leader and getting your personnel through certain calls that really, really hurt them. So obviously you never want to see a child hurt or a loss of a life or anything like that. And it really, really impacts our personnel when they're out there and they're actually working. Career or volunteer. When I say personnel, I'm saying a broad spectrum of career and volunteer. So all of them go through all of that. And at the national level, there's lots of programs that are available to educate them on how do you handle this when you've seen death after death after death after death, because it just resonates with you, if you will. So when I got involved with that group, and I've been involved with them for, my goodness, probably close to 10, 11 years now, it just made me feel like I was making a difference because I was going around the country and teaching people and bringing people up to par with, you know, what these programs are. And now these programs are actually offered online, and I can basically just help departments connect with those programs that are offered online so that they can see them. And then if they still want a personal touch to it, we can still go out and teach face-to-face. But it's a really great organization with regards to, you know, doing what we can for those that have lost a life. There's a memorial service that's every year, and that brings the families of those that lost their lives up there, and they offer, you know, behavioral health programs and a brother-to-brother kind of counseling session and a chief-to-chief because, I mean, I went through my very first line of duty death last year. I hope to never go through one of those again when we lost Nate, and It's a horrific thing. And you think you might have everything lined up training wise and just all the moons and the stars and everything align, and unfortunately, you know, something happens and we have to go back and we have to look at that. Why did it happen and how did it happen? And we have to work hard to prevent it from happening again.
Yeah, it's absolutely, as you said, Chief, a horrific experience. You've been very generous, and I know you have a job to do and you need to get back to it, but we'd be remiss, I think, if we didn't touch on a couple of items. First of all, we talked about diversity and recruitment, and I'm sure if I asked you, you're going to say, look, I'm not here to be the female chief. I'm here to be the best fire chief that I can be. But the reality is, you are the first female chief in Baltimore County. Talk about that. Any challenges that it posed, as well as the pride you feel in that, and then the whole effort to make the fire department more diverse, because it certainly was an ongoing effort when I was there, and it was a challenge.
Yes, absolutely. And we're able to hire more diverse classes, if you will, at the lower level, but it's a matter of actually showing that diversity level as you're coming up through the ranks, which is harder and harder. So the goal is to try to make sure that those that are, you know, that reflect the community understand that they can be a captain, they can be a lieutenant, And we need their leadership, and we need their diversity in those different levels of the department so that we can make sure that we reflect the different opinions and the different focuses as we move the department forward. And as far as being the first female chief, you're right. I want to be the best chief. I don't focus on being the first female chief. I focus on being the best chief. There are challenges every day. There are still firefighters out there and captains and lieutenants and battalion chiefs, if you will, that they look at me and they're like, yeah, I'm not listening to a woman. Well, they're going to have to figure that out because obviously that's going to happen. And I don't let that bother me, you know.
It does say chief before your name, right?
That's right.
It goes on the org chart every now and then.
Yes. But I don't, you know, I try to educate them. I don't even try to focus on that. I try to educate them and try to move past that and make them feel comfortable with the fact that I have their best interest at heart. My focus is to keep my people safe, educated, healthy, and so that they can do the best job that they can for the citizens. Because ultimately, the end result has got to be whether or not that citizen has had their problem mitigated and we've been able to do a good job and we take care of those that we are out here for. So,
Chief, thanks for that. And we would truly, our listeners would really wonder what had happened to us if we didn't say to you, talk to us about being an EMS worker, firefighter, during the time of a pandemic and being on the front lines. I'm sure that wasn't in the playbook. So what have you learned and what are our folks experiencing out there every day?
Oh my gosh. So the very first thing that you would not even, it would not even pay any attention to that you would not think would affect anyone is the fact that we have to wear all these masks and all these gowns. And we typically wear gloves. Obviously, that was a result years and years ago of having infection in the community, and we started wearing gloves. Well, now we wear masks so we can't see people's faces when we're taking care of them, you know, and that has really affected our providers out there. Not being able to see someone's face and having to keep our faces, that's personal, and you don't realize exactly what that impact means. And it's not necessarily that our call volume is up. It's the acuity of the people that we're seeing. They're much, much sicker. So when we finally get to them, because they're afraid to call 911 because of COVID, and we never, ever, ever would think that we would have to be promoting people to call 911 again because it seemed like we were overtaken by 911 calls previously, but now everyone's afraid to go to the hospital. So now we have to promote, if you're not feeling well, we got to get you there because we've got to get you help quick enough to make sure that you don't get too sick, that we're past that threshold, if you will. So that has really impacted our personnel because when they finally get to the people are so sick because they've held off on it that they feel helpless. They feel like they haven't really been able to do anything for them. And that really impacts our people because in the long run, that's what we're here for. And we have this passion to take care of people out there and make sure they're safe and make sure they're okay. And that's really, you know, impacted our providers. As far as what we've learned is, oh my gosh, making sure that we are a reflection of what the orders that have been sent down by the governor are. So making sure we're wearing our masks every opportunity that we can, which when you're fighting a fire and you've come outside of the fire and you're trying to put hose back on the fire engine, you're out of breath while you're doing that. So that's new, having that face mask on your face, trying to do that, you know, breathing it in and all. But, yeah, it's I would say the psychological impact on our emergency providers has been much, much bigger than the physical impact on them. Because they care so much about our citizens and they're so much sicker when we see them, they feel like they're helpless when they finally get there.
Chief, is it taking, my last question, and Nestor, you may have one or two more, is this taking an emotional toll on our firefighters and EMS workers? Is this taking them to an emotional state that's unusual?
Yes. Yes, it is. And we have actually set up a member services unit. And what that is within the department is it is a unit that if the firefighter or the emergency medical provider has basically transported a patient or been in contact with a patient and they need to talk to somebody about what does that mean for me, they have somebody that they can touch base with and they can contact with. We have our chaplains out there rotating through the fire stations to have discussions with our personnel to make sure they're okay. We have what is called a CISM, Critical Incident Stress Management Team. We have engaged them to actually go rotate out through the fire stations and chat with the firefighters and EMS providers to make sure that they have an opportunity to vent and talk through what they're feeling.
Did that happen to you 30 years ago in Howard County? Was that available? Mental health was...
No.
I was going to say that sounds new age and that sounds real important. Yeah. It sounds like something that wasn't there many years ago, right?
Yes, that's correct. As a matter of fact, many years ago when I came in, if you even showed emotion after coming back from a call,
you weren't strong enough to be on the force. Right,
right?
Sure,
You shouldn't be here. Now we're trying to, and that's one of the efforts that we're actually pushing out nationally, we're trying to help people understand, and that actually evolved out of 9/11. When we had the 9/11 attack, the mental health and the stress factor and the critical incident stress and the peer support actually evolved out of 9/11. And we have been building programs to help the personnel understand that it's okay that they feel that way and that it's okay if you need to talk to a counselor and work through those emotions. Because we have actually had people retire because they were so psychologically impacted by all the calls that they ran. It's tough when you run three babies in a row that pass away. You know? It's very, very difficult to absorb that emotion and... We are connected to people. We care about people. That's why we're doing this.
Well, it's been a great visit with you. We didn't get to Ladder 49. We didn't get to any of the other sort of things here. And Don usually likes to do, if you were a tree, what kind of tree you would be.
Come on. You've got to ask the chief. You got to ask the chief who, in these stressful times, when she's on duty 24/7, chief, what do you do to relax? What do you do to kick back? What is Joanne?
I don't want to hear that the fire chief barbecues. That's not what I want to hear.
Well, actually, I have a Harley.
There you go.
And I do like to go ride every once in a while.
We're getting good weather for that.
And yeah, you need good weather for that. So, I do get on my motorcycle, and even though I have my phone with me, you obviously cannot pay attention to that phone while you're riding on that motorcycle, but it can buzz in my side, and I make sure that I can still connect if I need to, but it gives me the opportunity to just, you know, let the breeze hit me and focus on just riding and how beautiful it is, and, you know, just that's probably my biggest relaxation, spending time with family. I have many grandkids.
And you can't hug them right now.
That's right. I have 9 grandchildren, and so we FaceTime. We FaceTime, which has actually been kind of cool. We figured out how to do that jointly, and so I do get to actually see them a little bit more than normal because I have some of them in Pennsylvania, some of them in North Carolina, and one we're blessed to have here with us in Maryland. And for them to all get on the same, you know, FaceTime and see each other is really kind of cool. So that's brought some things, you know, technology, that wonderful technology has brought some wonderful family times for us that we didn't have before as well. So,
Chief, thanks for all of your service. I mean, it's an incredibly demanding job, and just on behalf of all of our listeners, I know they would want us to stay. Thank you. So, Nestor, once again, did we get smarter?
Yeah, we got smarter as well. And I was just going to say, the last thing I was going to say is we've all seen a building on fire, and I've grew up with firefighters and a family of firefighters down the street from me, the whole deal, and know about the valor of all that. But I just want to tell you a story. 2 years ago, I'm in Montana, and we're driving along out in the western part of the world, and we turned the corner and looked up and saw a forest fire breaking out, and we saw the firefighters arriving literally in the middle of, there were no fire hydrants on this road 30 miles from anywhere, and you always see that on television, right? These western fires, and we hear firefighters going out to fight these fires, and the problems we've had in Australia, which is near and dear to my wife and I's heart, and see the koalas, see all of that going on. It's just unbelievable that anyone signs up to do it, and I tip my cap to all of you who do it, but not that I haven't been moved by other fires, but there's something about being on a road and seeing it on fire and realizing there's no water to put it out, you know? Chief, we really appreciate the visit. Thanks for coming on with us.
Absolutely. I'm honored to be here, and thank you for having me on.
Don Mahler is the former Baltimore County executive. Gets us great guests, and we tell these stories with Fire Chief Joanne Rund. We're also going to hear from Police Chief Melissa Hyatt as well. A lot of politicians and a lot of folks running for the mayor of Baltimore will be doing that, as well as educational leaders throughout all of our episodes of Baltimore Positive. You can find me, you can find Don at Baltimore Positive. We've merged the brands at WNST.net. I'm still a Baltimore County business owner, so I want to personally thank Fire Chief Joanne Rund for keeping us safe out in Baltimore County, out on Hart Road, where I've owned a business for 23 years. So it's great to talk to the county folks. We're going to talk to the city folks as well. I am Nestor. He is Don. We are Baltimore Positive here at WNST.